Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where conversations about work and money make you want to spring forward because it's March and it's Pisces season.
Oh, man, that sounds like we're about to lose an hour soon.
Hey.
Off to an ominous start. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with two T's everywhere in life except Twitter. And Rich is available at I am Rich Jones.
I am.
Also, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you receive our weekly newsletter, highly coveted and recommended. Thank you to the shout outs on the timeline, by the way, covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
Yes. And Pisces season, man, it's a very real thing. I know I say spring forward, that makes people think of lost sleep, but this is also, it's also the birthday month, man. Approaching 35 very quickly.
Oh, you finally joined the 3-5 team. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard.
About to, man.
I always forget about that.
Yeah.
Any 3-5 revelations you'd like to share with the group?
Not yet. I'm sure they'll come up in the coming weeks here as the birthday arrives and passes. But I will say that with it being Pisces season, I'm extra introspective right now. And I will say I did recently start going back to the gym, partially for vanity reasons, but also for, you know, I can't keep doing the same things and expecting I'm going to maintain the same level of health. So I should probably get on this before I get my next physical. So I go in and my numbers look good and they look right versus, come on, bro, what is you doing?
You trying to pull that thing where the maid's about to come over so you clean up first? Don't be having to be out here embarrassing us in front of company. I can dig it.
Pretty much, man.
I feel it.
So what's the topic for today, man?
We're back in the money minute, which of course always takes 15 minutes as you've been around for a while. So I just want to, you know, set expectations. But for those of you who are new here, the money minute focuses on simple personal finance advice that you can use immediately. The goal is to have a conversation, not a lecture. And if you have a money question of your own, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. We do not respond to every email, but we do see every email. So we do appreciate it. Thank you.
Or at least you see every email.
Yeah, we appreciate the compliments and we do see both the questions and the compliments. Sometimes we have to pull some subject matter expertise from behind the scenes, but do not worry that those questions are in the queue.
I'm going to let you take that heat from anyone who's like, well, I emailed you 2 months ago.
I read it. That is all I have committed to thus far. And during this week's minute, I actually changed this up a little bit, hit it with the remix, but how the tax cut can help you save 1x your income. So if you've been to the website recently, you know that I wrote a post called How to Save 1x Your Income by Age 30 and 3x by Age 40. I'll get that in the show notes for those of you who hadn't made it. But I also made a recent change. Now, let's talk about what will not happen for those of you who like just had a conniption, probably got your right or left eye twitching, depending on your strong muscle. We're not going to talk about politics. We're not going to talk about the pros, cons, debt, conservative, independent, you know, for it, against it. Yeah.
That was my first thought too, man. I was like, uh-oh, it sounds like you're advocating for something that was done by someone that a lot of people do not advocate for. So.
Well, all I'm going to say is, regardless of your political affiliations, actually, a lot of people, just by math, did get a tax cut. And that's all I'm going to talk about on this particular show. Y'all can tune in to NPR for all the other in-depth analysis or whatever your show of choice may be. But that will not happen here. So I'll get those tax brackets in the show notes. I sent them over to Rich as well. I've actually sent them out to a number of people. This will come from Business Insider, although I think they're public record now. It's not that difficult to find. But this is a pretty clear-cut chart that I saw. And then my aha moment was, hey, my taxes are going to go down by 3%. Now, like most people, and frankly, most of my friends and most of the people who asked me this question. In fact, I even had a coworker reach out, shout out to them if they're listening to the show, and say, hey, Marcus, you might be interested in this chart. It was like a money article about how to use your taxes. I go, I appreciate that. So I just want to recognize that individual. But I could have sat there, took my little 3% tax raise, gone out, make it rain with, I don't know, $74 or whatever that equates to. And I was like, You know what? I'm doing okay. I don't need this extra 3%, you know, because of all the money moves that we've talked about on the show. What's the smart thing that I could do with this money? And so that's what I want to share with y'all. And so before that 3% ever hit my check, I rolled it into my pre-tax 401k. And then, so now that would push me to 4%. And I think that would push me in totality up to 19% as far as various investment retirement accounts that I have. I have three. It sounds like you had a comment there, sir.
Yeah. So in the previous year, 2017, did you set it so that when the tax rate change takes effect, you're automatically contributing that extra 3%, or did you just update it at the beginning of the year? How did that work?
I actually only get paid once a month, which creates an amazing level of humbleness, and I had to plan ahead. So I actually set it in January because it didn't show up until my February check. And so I actually never saw the tax return. I don't want to. Like, ignorance is bliss in this situation. I just moved that 3% so that by the time my February check was calculated, it was already rolling into my 401k.
Okay, cool.
And the funny thing about that is I actually thought my check would go down because I figured between the difference of the tax rate and the rollover, it actually went up. So I still took, it was like $13. So now I'm like balling out with an extra, you know, Vente white mocha on them boys. It wasn't anything huge and it definitely wasn't as big as the tax return would be, but my check still went up. And we've talked about this before. I assume it's because my after-tax income was lower since I just rolled it into the 401k.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty cool. I still managed to sneak a raise out of the tax cut. And so what does this mean for me and what it might mean for you? Like I said, it's nothing ball out of control. It is only 3%. However, I'm still going to take, in this case, even slightly more take-home money than I would have before the tax cut. But now, because I pushed that tax cut to my 401k, for me, that's going to equate to about $3,000 a year that I otherwise likely would have spent and I would not have taken home, because that'd be $3,000 plus tax. So I would never have net that $3,000. And what I'm going to kind of hit on for the people at home is most people aren't doing anything. Is a judgment-free zone, as those of you who've been on the show know. So if you're one of those individuals who are not doing anything, this might also be an opportunity for you to get a employer match. So if your employer has a match, most offer between 3 to 6%. You could take your 3, 4, 5% tax cut, put that to your 401k, your employer matches, and suddenly you're looking at 10, 11, 12% in your 401k, especially for those individuals that have zero. So for y'all, that could be the difference between $1,000, $2,000, you might be at $10,000, $12,000, depending on, you know, what your income may be. So this could be a significant difference. And let's say, even if it was not, let's say you're like me, it's only $3,000 a year. If you did nothing else, so only this year, you made that $3,000 and then you said, you know what, I can't live without this 3% of my life. I need that money. Forget this. Forget what Mark is talking about. I'm going to take it home. And you just left it in an investment account. You had an average return of 7%. That would still grow to $70,000. So making 12 months sacrifice, it would grow to 70,000 by, I use the retirement age of 67. And I'm going to talk about the calculator that I use for that and why it's my new favorite tool. Yeah, I asked Rich to jump in with any questions that he may have for the common man if I got to him depth here. So hot seat.
So I was going to say that 3% is going to vary from person to person. So it could be 4%, 5%. It could be 2%. It could be 1%.
Yes.
And the other thing I was thinking that I did for myself as far as increasing my 401k contribution, I have it set up through my provider where every year it increases by a certain percent automatically. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's something that works for people as well. I didn't look at anything about the tax regulation or anything like that. So if someone has been doing nothing, and by the way, I do think there is a point where judgment comes in. So like, if you've been listening to this show for a year and you've still done nothing, I am judging you. At the very least, I just want to put that out there.
But, bad cop, bad cop.
But for someone that's done nothing, they're like looking at this, they're looking at tax brackets. They're like, am I really getting an increase, decrease? Would you suggest that they go back and look at their last few pay statements of the year? Like,
yes. And I think it's like 90%. So pretty much like you said, you'd have to be, honestly, if you didn't get a tax cut, you probably don't need to be listening to the show. You're probably doing okay. Because the 90, 95% of individuals did get a tax cut. And that's why I said I don't want to get into the politics of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what I would say is to look at how do you maximize the tax cut you got, whether it's 4% or 1%. especially if you work in an organization where they're going to do an employer match. And then frankly, if you're putting away 0% right now, this is an opportunity for you to start that emergency fund. And I'm going to talk a little bit, emergency fund or IRA, because even if your employer doesn't have it, you can go to a credit union. Honestly, most people can go to their bank. There's several different avenues to still set this up. And then of course, you can go online. You could set up maybe a robo advisor. I'm not going to name any names because none are sponsoring this particular podcast. They can reach out to me if they want their name dropped.
I hear you, brah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And then I kind of want to talk about like threefold, a quick update, what I did, why I did it. And then I'm going to wrap it up with what's in it for you and kind of why I made these changes, you being the listener. So this all started when I was like, okay, let me push this additional 3% into my 401k. I hadn't logged into my 401k account. I track it using Mint. So my 401 is linked to my Mint. So I know what it's doing, but I hadn't logged into, I had forgot the password. And I definitely learned and continue to recognize that I am what I would call a passive investor. I can't be in my account every day trying to beat the stock market. I almost had a heart attack. Like when I logged in, and I was like going to make some changes. But what I've come to realize is no one else is going to do it for me. And even if they could, a lot of the advice that I've gotten is that I'm not in a point or position, and most people aren't, where my finances are not so complicated, or honestly even so high, that I need a certified financial planner. So most of them like, look, you can do this yourself. You just need to have the courage to do so. So I took one weekend. I said, all right, Marcus, this is going to be it. So I logged into my account. And it actually happened because it's actually someone we had on the show, and I'll need to reflect back on the show notes, but he made fun of me. He was like, so which accounts are you invested in? I was like, I have no idea. He was like, oh, what? You know, he made like this scrunched up face, and he gave me like that fatherly look of disappointment. I was like, oh man, I got to do something about this. I've really let this guy down. He's like, well, at least you're doing something, like, you know, like that pity pat on the head. And I was like, man, I gotta win back his trust. It was Ryan Inman, and I'll get that in the show notes.
I was wondering, I was like, who made you feel that way?
Yeah, it was Ryan at FinCon. He was like, so, you know, which accounts are you invested in? I was like, I have one. He's like, oh, okay, what's the diversification? I was like, I have no idea. And the funny thing is, I logged into the account, and I don't know how other people's are, but they're not easy to understand, but it's a one sheet. So each account that you could sign up for, you can download. It's actually two pages, but they call it a one sheet. And I'm going to walk through what mine has. But what I would say, if you don't have something similar to this, is to sit down, and someone should be able to explain it to you as simply as this is laid out. So I have three here because, like I said, there was three accounts that I was investing in. It goes over risk profile. I'm reading from the one sheet. Risk profile, asset allocation, equity sector diversification. So what does that mean? Technology, consumer, healthcare, industrials. That's just some example. It explains the largest holdings, my geographic diversification, and my bond sector diversification. Now, do I know what all those things mean? No. But honestly, I don't need to. And it's important that that information is available. So if I did need to sit down with somebody, I could take this one sheet, which happens to be two pages, and say, does this look good to me? But what I liked here, and I'll talk about, is it made sense to me. So when I look at the equity sector diversification, I'm like, okay, the highest diversification right now is technology. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Healthcare is number three. I know that we have an aging demographic. I know that, or I just found out that 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 every day of the year for like the next 20 years.
I saw that.
Yo, that's insane. So I'm like, huh, I should probably be in healthcare because older people are getting old.
It makes sense to me.
Exactly. So I'm by no means a sophisticated investor, but this profile makes sense to me. I have control of it. I looked at my fees. They are ridiculously low, which actually I was grateful for. And I looked at that by determining, I went to Investopedia and said, they said, what is a good investment fee? They said, you don't want to be over 3%. If you're paying over 3% for fees for managing your account, that you're, I don't think getting ripped off is the word they were used, but you can do better. Shout out to Drake.
That's pretty much what they were saying though.
Yeah. And so,
like, if you're paying more than that, you're getting swindled.
Yeah. And mine's like less than 1%. So I was like, oh, all right. So I appreciate this company. And once again, I would shout them out, but they know where to reach me if they want that shout out. Go ahead. You have a comment?
No. I was laughing at you avoiding saying the names until they come to you with that check. I respect it, man. I respect it.
Hey, man, I'm learning from the experts. So what did I do? I was formerly in a retirement target date fund. So that's actually a good account to be in. If you're lazy like me, you only want to log in once a year. So what is a target date fund? from Investopedia, and I'll get this in the show notes. Target date funds manage funds to a specified asset allocation through the target date, which is typically, and in my case, your retirement date. I'm not going to say the retirement date because some people are going to laugh and some people are going to be like, you know, that you're a real dinosaur. But trust me, it is tied to my retirement date. And that's usually going to be right there in the fund. Then it goes on to say most fund marketing materials show the glide path of allocation across the entire investment horizon, which is specified target date. So I actually got into this account originally. I don't remember where I read it. It might have been Investopedia. And it made sense to me. So I'm like, okay, I don't like managing my accounts. It makes me nervous when I log in and the stock market's going up, the stock market's going down, my account's going up. Like this, I don't like it. So what is the easiest diversified portfolio I can have? I looked in there and I was like, huh, this one will automatically diversify based on when I retire. Sounds good to me. I clicked it and I moved on with my life.
Well, question.
Yeah.
So diversification, why is that important?
I think like anything, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. So let me get my one page diversification. In that case, it was geographic diversification. I had 60% of my assets in the United States, 7% in Japan, 5% in the United Kingdom. And then that translates to 52% U.S. stock, 36% non-stock. And at that time, it was 8% in cash. So it was an inherently more conservative investment, I guess, portfolio. But that's good for me because I'm not trying to get rich through investment, because I feel like that is, in order to do so, first of all, let me rephrase, most people don't beat the stock market. Like every study they've ever done, like 1% of investors beat the stock market, especially over a 5 or 10 year period. So it's actually the exception that anyone beats the stock market. I am perfectly comfortable with an average return of like anywhere between 4 to 10%. And I'll talk a little bit of how I came to those rates, because that aligns with my personality type. I don't like to log in and see my account looking like one of those heart monitors. I don't have that in my life. Every time I log in, it's like, doo, doo, and I'm scared that it's not going to do no more. Like, you know,
or it's just going to do.
Exactly. So I'm not about that life. I know that about myself. And it's like somebody asked me, why am I not invested in this case? They asked about Bitcoin, but cryptocurrencies. You know, I don't knock anyone who is, but I cannot handle something going from 10 to 14 to 10 to 11,000 to 15, like from week to week. No, I'm not about that life. Yeah. That is not the type of risk profile that I'm willing to have and monitor. And so, I think it's about putting that personal back in personal finance. If you're about that, and I would say, you know what, if you're young and, you know, the simple advice I heard is have twice as much to lose as you're willing to invest. So, you know, with it being at 10,000, you need to be able to willing, you should have 20,000 to lose. If you're taking out a loan to buy 10,000, like you're going about life all wrong. Now, if you got 20,000 loose, I feel like it's a lot easier to take those type of, in this case, Bitcoin or $10,000 risk. Yeah. Because there is great reward, but there's inherently great risk. And yeah, for me, I'm perfectly content with average returns. I just want to be an average guy, strong C student.
Strong C.
Yeah. Take my little $1 million.
Not even like a B minus. Just like, nah, I'm going to take this C and be okay with it.
I graduated with a 2.3. There's a lot of complicated stories behind it. At one point, I had like a 3.7. Then I transferred. I lost interest, failed a few classes, couldn't drop in time. And so, you know, whatever.
This sounds like something that should be discussed over drinks offline.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. Like, but I learned, you know, I'm perfectly content being a strong C student. And actually, a 2.3 is probably a strong or unstrong C student. So, you know, I've actually come up. I'm holding myself to a higher standard than when I graduated college. Just so we're on the same page. But I graduated,
which is all that matters, especially now.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time somebody asked me what my GPA was.
I might punch them in the face if they did.
Yeah, it's actually been so long, I almost forgot GPA was the term you're supposed to use. And so, to that point, let me be clear. No, Obama, I was terrified. Like, the personal finance and, you know, I talk about it on the show all the time, but when you're responsible for moving your own, you know, 10 stacks around for free with no taxes, no fees, and no one looking over your shoulder to help you do so, it wasn't easy. And it was, I mean, it was easy to do. It was literally two clicks. It was like, are you sure? I've never stared at "Are you sure?" Yeah. I think I walked away from the computer. I took a couple shots. You know, I paced around the apartment. I was like, I went back and I said yes, and just like that, it was moved. And because it was within the same investment firm, there was no fees associated with moving that funds around or moving those investment funds around.
Yeah, that would make me super anxious. So I actually thought about when I send out the newsletter. And so for those who send out like email campaigns and stuff like that, and use MailChimp. And before I publish every newsletter, there's like a monkey's hand or like finger that's like over a button. And that's what and you see like sweat dripping down. That's what I'm imagining you were like, except that you weren't a monkey, because that would be horribly offensive and racist.
I'm gonna let it slide for the greater good, but I do get the greater analogy and metaphor there. And I was, it was nerve wracking. And I want people to be aware of that as well, that I didn't just go in and be like, oh, well, you know, it's only a few thousand. I've spent 10 years saving up, whatever, move. Like, nah, like it took energy, purpose, and it was so exhausting. Like I had to like log off and lay out. And I don't plan on looking again. You know, like I said, I'm tracking it in Mint. I don't plan on logging back in again unless something goes terribly wrong within the next year or so. And for me, I feel like that's the type of investor, if I want to call myself that, and I'm even hesitant to do that, even though I am investing, that I see myself as. And again, I think that's again about putting that personal back into the personal finance.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
So what I did do, and I can talk a little bit about my goal, and I'll tie that back to our most recent episode where we're talking about 2018 goals, because that's important as well, is so the money moves I actually made was I actually split. So I took my currently invested fund and I moved that into I guess you would call it a more conservative fund. So I actually I took it out of the index fund that was tied to my retirement, and I put it in a Vanguard growth index, because although it's slightly more aggressive, I do feel like, in the advice that I read and sought out, and that's another thing that I recommend, before I do anything, especially as it ties to investments, I usually read three things about it. I don't listen to one guy. I don't listen to one show. I mean, if you're going to listen to Marcus on this podcast, you could listen to two others. And then I make an informed decision. So the ones that I looked at, pretty much all universally actually recommended Vanguard accounts. So I went with two. One of those is a growth index. And the other one is a more standard, still a Vanguard fund. It's an institutional index, but it mirrors the S&P 500.
Which is super common.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that. Like I said, strong C student. I don't need to excel to the front. Some of y'all might be asking, what's the S&P 500? I'll get that in the show notes, but from Investopedia, that would be an index of stocks issued by 500 large companies with a market capital of at least $6.1 billion. It is seen as a leading indicator of U.S. equities and a reflection of the performance of large cap universe. So the advice I got, and I actually think it was an investor who was making a joke, it was a video I watched, is the reason most people invest in the S&P 500 is because two things would have to go wrong for it, and that is the end of the world or nuclear war. He goes, and if either one of those happen, you've got bigger things to worry about. So I am perfectly content rising or falling with millions of other individuals in the S&P 500.
Yeah, I'm in that one too. So that I do know. And so like you too, good brother, I do not understand the ins and outs of everything as far as investing. I know when I initially set it up, I had the consultation or whatever. And so I kind of did set and forget, but I know that the S&P index is one of the batches that I got some monies in.
Yeah. And I look at it this way, because some people are like, well, I don't want to do anything until I'm an expert in it. It's actually, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, I work out, but I don't not work out until I'm a bodybuilder. Like, I don't need to be a doctor to know that I need to eat healthy and manage my calories and go to the gym three times a week. Like, you don't need to be an investment expert in order to start investing. And if you feel that you need to be, which unless you dedicate your life to it, you likely will not be, then I would recommend meeting with one. If it makes you so nervous, or you know, you've got that analysis paralysis, then meet with that expert or experts, or read about them is what I like to do, until you are comfortable doing so. But the excuse of, well, I don't understand it, so I'm not going to do it, that just doesn't hold water, I don't feel like. And to put it even more simply, let's say, well, there's going to be some people say, well, I put it in a savings account. I'm like, well, you're probably earning less than 1%. The stock market did 19% on average. So you just lost 18% because you were scared. And again, great risk, great return. And even if you did have it in the savings account, and you earned 1%, inflation was around 2%. So technically you lost money. Your buying power on that dollar went down while everyone else's went up. So whether you put it in an investment, whether you put it in a savings account, and you know, you can go back to the, and we'll probably talk about this on another show about rent versus buy, whether you put it into a home, at the end of the day, you at least want to match or beat inflation. I feel that that's universally everyone's goal. And if you're investing 0% or you're investing in an account that earns less than inflation, every year you're losing money. I don't care how much raises you get or how many bonuses, because you're living literally in the now. And each year that you're not beating inflation, your buying power shrinks. It's like all those stories. I mean, if you don't believe, just ask your parents how much milk was when they were little, or gas and all those things. And then our kids are going to be, will be talking about, and I just realized the other day, I was looking at gas. I remember when I started driving at 16, it was unheard of for gas to be over a dollar. I remember when gas hit $1.07, people were freaking out.
Yo, I remember when it was like 99 cents a gallon at Stewart's on Southern Boulevard in Albany, New York. That was mad specific, but I'm going to go with it.
I remember people were losing their mind when they hit a dollar. And I'll never hit a dollar again. And that's my point. So we have all these readily available examples that everything around us is becoming more expensive. And if you saw the chart that I dropped on the timeline, most things are outpacing inflation. Housing, college, even college textbooks. They say like college textbooks are 200% up over the last 20 years, which is, don't get me started.
Yeah, there's a whole industry in reselling college textbooks that I heard about on the Planet Money podcast, which was kind of shocking to me. But yeah, that is a different rabbit hole.
Yeah, that is insane. So again, why did I go with the one with the growth index? And so for those of you who may wonder, again, I looked at the largest holdings, and it has Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Google. These are organizations that make sense to me. They're not particularly scary. I've never not heard of them before. I use them on a day-to-day basis. Even down the list here a little bit is Home Depot, Visa, Comcast, Coca-Cola. These things make sense to me.
Yeah.
So even if I don't understand what Apple, Facebook, Google, Home Depot, and Coca-Cola are doing, these are organizations that I see on a day-to-day basis. And some advice that I've seen is to invest in what you know. So these are things that I recognize and know. So I feel comfortable being invested in them.
So I would say a lot of people don't know this, that Google is technically, so as in terms of how it appears in the stock market, I think the stock symbol is still GOOG, but Google's parent company is Alphabet. So if you go look and you see GOOG and you're like, why does it say Alphabet? That's just like the parent company that owns Google.
Actually, I appreciate you saying that, because I was going to say that and wasn't sure people would recognize it. So I'm invested in Alphabet Inc. A and Alphabet Inc. C.
Yeah,
I don't know what A and C are, but I feel that Google's much more smarter than me, strong C student that I may be. So I feel comfortable that they will do things to make themselves richer, and I will just grab on their coattails and hopefully get richer along with them.
Yes, is all I will say.
And I'll say, I'll end with this particular section. The advice that I heard is, you know, even if you don't understand whether you should be aggressive or conservative, really, whether you're in a retirement date target fund, which there's nothing wrong with, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about why I specifically switch, is you can invest in stocks, or there's nothing wrong with being invested in stocks at a high percentage until you're about 10 years from retirement, because that's when you start to, and you still may want to stay in stock if you want to really beat inflation. But that's when you start asking yourself, okay, how do I start ramping down into a more monetary or conservative strategy? Because I'm going to need to start living off this money. A lot of the benefit of just being young, and I'll put an asterisk by us, you being almost 35, me being well into 35, is you have several years to recover from the ups and downs. That is, you know, the whole reason why you want to benefit from that compound interest and the rises and the falls. Buying low and selling high. I almost got that backwards. That's why I had to slow it down. So you could keep that in mind for those of you who are like, okay, what should I do to get in? Honestly, if you're in your 20s, just get in. Yeah. And just ride the wave.
Yeah. And also, there are a lot of classes that are out there. So we had the gentleman on when we were at FinCon who has his own course for folks that are looking to get into investing, and I'm drawing a blank on his name. I keep wanting to call him Clarence because that was his name in the movie, and it's driving me nuts. But then there's also a lot of apps out there to help people get started as well. Now, I haven't used a lot of these different apps. I think the only one that I've used is Acorn. But there are a lot more apps that are out there nowadays. And I think Stash would be one of them, where they want to make sure that it's not just set and forget, but that you're also learning as you go along. So they make it super easy for you. And it's like, oh, by the way, in case you want to know why this is the case, here's the explanation for that. So in terms of not getting started, I mean, you really could start with like $10 in an app. Now, you're not going to be getting crazy returns where $10 suddenly becomes, you know, $1,000 in the course of a week or months or even a year or anything like that. But it's a simple step to take to get started. So what I'll probably end up doing is looking up and playing around with some of the apps, because this is also one big thing that I'm thinking about for myself this year. And I don't think I mentioned it on the goals episode specifically, but this is the first year where I'll get into more of the air quotes active investing. Now, I'm not going to be in my account every day, you know, like you were saying earlier, but this will be the first year where beyond 401k, I'm going to look into some of this stuff and try to create my own little portfolio and start understanding some of this stuff at a higher and more in-depth level.
And I would just add, I mean, I don't disagree, but I think you can do both. And that's kind of the goal that I have for myself, is I want to max out my 401k because I have such low fees and I benefit from an organization that offers that to me. And then once I do that and I feel comfortable there, and I'm going to crunch a little few numbers here about why that's such a focus to me, then I'd be more comfortable looking at individual stocks or doing what I think most people view as traditional investing in active or maybe even aggressive investing. Because I feel like once I've taken care of that foundation, I'd be more comfortable taking those types of risk. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a good segue into why did I do it? So I was actually, and you were in town. I don't think you remember this, and you might remember why you don't remember this. I was watching PBS. You know, you had your reasons. I was watching PBS, and Suze Orman, whom I just did a review of Do's and Don'ts, and I'll get that in the show notes. Her book is actually a very quick and good read. And she specifically said that she doesn't recommend retirement target dates account because they are typically too conservative for young investors. So while they are good for someone who isn't doing anything and hasn't even started and they're risk averse, she thinks in most cases they could be too risk averse and it creates this complacency. So you get into this target date fund and most people are like, well, now I don't have to do anything ever again. And she says, well, this was actually before this happened. But last year, like, for example, in the stock market has a 19%, you know, return on average, and you're invested conservatively, let's say 30% in the stock market. Now, 70% of your investments has potentially lost out on that huge growth. And if you had been more active, you might say, hey, this looks like a great year. The economy's growing. Things look good. I should be heavily invested in the stock market. But if you're just relying on this target date fund, it doesn't take that into account. It just looks at your age, when you plan on retire, and then it puts together, maybe the easy way to look at it is a pie chart of your asset allocations. And it just does that, and it gets more and more conservative as you move towards your retirement date.
Which is how they tell people to, I mean, as you get older anyway, to be more conservative, because you don't want to blow money fast and then be living on the street, basically. But I was going to ask, though, so the thing with the retirement target date is that this whole type of account is geared toward getting you to a specific number and not so much going above and beyond that number, which is what makes it conservative. Would that be accurate?
Yes. And another thing to keep in mind is it inherently assumes that you want to retire at either 65 or 67, or you can set your retirement date. So for those individuals, and I think most millennials are, who want to retire early, and that's something I think we need to recalibrate, a lot of this investment advice, you know, save 20%, save 15%, save 10%, assumes you want to retire at 67, 70 or later. So if you want to retire early, you need to be doing more. You do need to be active. And in most cases, you're going to need to put more than that 10-20%, because that advice is based on a 67-year-old retirement age. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, there is not. I was just talking to someone the other day who was like, yo, all this entrepreneurial stuff, great, but I'm starting to realize things. 9 to 5 might be the best way for me to accomplish my goals, and I'm okay with that. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And I know we both have our own interest on the outside, but everyone doesn't need to be an entrepreneur. Everyone doesn't need to work, you know, or everyone doesn't need to strive to work until they're 42. You know, it's completely fine if someone wants to work through the full retirement age.
Yeah, There's nothing wrong with that. And I think for me, you know, similarly, we've had some of these same conversations. I think what I may have miscalibrated was I'm looking for peace of mind.
Yeah.
Now, whether that comes through a 9-to-5 or through entrepreneur or consulting or working for myself, I'm less focused on or honestly even worried about as long as I have financial independence and financial security. So then I had to reframe, what does financial security look like for me? And, you know, I'll hit it again, just in case people didn't catch that. I know some people highly recommend personal capital. I don't have anything against personal capital because it's mostly geared towards the investment portfolio, your net worth. It helps you ensure that your retirement portfolio is diversified and, as you said, has the funding amount to support the lifestyle that you have, you know, envisioned for your retirement. However, for me, it didn't connect to two of my biggest accounts, so it didn't work. So I still actively monitor mine through Mint. So, you know, Mint has its pros and cons, and I'm actually going to talk about on a future episode some changes I've made to Mint, because I think you have to be more active. It's more of a, I feel like Mint shows you what you're doing. It doesn't necessarily correct it. It doesn't force you to change. It's just like, hey, you know, you made a couple of mistakes last month. And unless you do something about it, or you reflect on it, or you make some changes, Mint's like, yeah, well, see you next month. And I don't feel like that's Mint's fault. But I think a lot of people expect more from it than what it is set up to deliver. So because of that, I've set up a way where, one, I had to recalibrate my budgets and actually, I think, use Mint how it's designed,
yeah,
best designed to use to make positive changes in how you manage your money.
Yeah.
And so I'll talk a little bit about that on the future show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I may have some thoughts on that, too, because I just in the past few weeks here set up my budget on there. And you know, it's actually been pretty helpful now. Yeah, you know what? I was about to start talking about those things that we'll talk about in the other show. So I'm gonna let you continue. But I will say it is nice to get some of these alerts that I wasn't getting before. It's like, yo, it's the 15th and you're already $300 over this budget item. Which the one thing I will say is sometimes it doesn't mean that you're being reckless. It just means that you underestimated how much you need to spend in that particular category.
True. And I also like that it's like, well, maybe if I'm not spending in another category, I need to either cut back here or stay in there, or if I'm being more responsible in another area. But I think most people, and actually present company included, I had Mint for 2 whole years. In the first 2 years, I never set up my budget. I just used the one that it automatically calculates.
Yeah.
And if I went over or under, I was like, whatever. I usually just look at the little flywheel. I'm like, huh, this looks interesting. I'd recategorize some things and I move on with my day. But to your point, once I set up those budgets, and it sounds intuitive, but for some reason I never did it. It's a much more useful tool to me now that I've appropriately calibrated what my budget is supposed to be in those different line items.
Definitely.
And I think most people don't set it up in that manner. They're more of a passive Mint user. And I'll talk about how to be an active Mint user.
Coming soon to PMB.
So what I've learned and what's in it for you. People have probably been seeing, but I'm going to plug again, investor.gov, which I stumbled upon from a money article, literally Time Money, the website.com. It's become my new favorite tool. I never heard of it before. I don't even hear most people talking about it, but it's really simple. And like most things government, it actually has a ton of information. It's very helpful and they never talk about it.
Yo, so, this is actually one of the, so a lot of the government websites leave a lot to be desired. This one actually looks okay.
Yeah, I've been impressed and I've gone to it easily half a dozen times, if not a whole dozen times since I've learned about it. There's actually a lot of free information on the website. I'm not going to hit all of it here today, but I'll talk about what's important today's conversation. But it talks about 401ks, investment tools, when you need to draw down, how to use. But what I primarily use is the compound interest calculator and the savings goal calculator. It's on the bottom of the website if you visit, and I highly recommend you do. And I'll get that in the show notes. It's investor.gov.
So I'm curious. So I went to the site and they have an older black couple on the homepage. So I'm wondering if that's just what they intended or if they got some cookie on my computer that's like, you're a black guy, we're going to show you the black couple.
I wish I could confirm or deny this conspiracy, but I am also black and that is also the image I see when I visit.
So we should probably have some people just confirm it for us. So when you do visit the site, let us know what you see.
I'd actually be curious about that because I don't think they'd have the sophistication of Google.
Which is crazy because it's the government.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So once I get to those calculators, and I have a post that walks through this in a much more detail than I'm going to talk about here today if I go a little bit quickly. I plug in various numbers, but I usually use a 7% average rate of return because, first of all, that's fairly conservative. You can debate this. There's all kinds of people who say it depends on when you get in the market, and that is accurate. And whether it's a 10% return over 40 years, I think Dave Ramsey estimated 12%, and a bunch of people told him that was impossible. And then he told those people to kiss his where the sun don't shine. And so I'm not getting into those debates today. I use 7%. And just in case you don't like that, what I really like about this is it has a built-in variance calculator. So for those of you who don't know what that means, it means how much above or below the rate that you expect would you like to see. So I usually use plus or minus 3%. So that means my returns will show me my goal of 7%, but it'll also show me what happens if I average 10% and what happens if I average 4%. So why does this matter and what's in it for you? I came to the realization that if I could save $150,000, which might sound impossible, but actually is very doable, and that would align with my goal of maxing out my 401k. So for those of you who don't know, the 401k max, and it goes up and it changes from year to year, but it's about $18,000. So for those of you who aren't good at math, that's about 5 years. So 18,000 times five, that's going to be a little less than 150,000, but with interest, that would get me, or honestly anyone, there. So why does that matter? Why did I make up this number, which to some people is large, to some people is small? Because if you save $150,000 and you don't retire for 27 years, which would be the case in my case, and it might be even a longer time frame if you're a young person, that would grow to $1 million by itself. If you average the rate of return to 7%, technically it'd be $932,080 for the auditors out there, present company included. Now, if you average 10%, you're looking at $1.9 million. And let's say, I don't know, you went out for Bitcoin, you were completely, you just lost in the market every year for 27 years. I don't know what you did, but for some reason, you only had a 4% return. You would still have $400,000 at retirement, and you'd be four times richer than the average wealthiest household for median income, I should say, right now, because the median income, even at the wealthiest, is about 100,000 net worth. So you'd be four times richer. So for me, that's my goal, to reach 150,000. And then I feel like that frees me up, as Rich talked about, and I'll get in the show notes. We actually have that available at paychecksandbalances.com/tools, because they have paid us. And I'll get that robo-advisor in there, where if you want to select a robo-advisor, is usually a fund. You mentioned Stash, and I think that's one that they could select from. A lot of those accounts, you can just say, I want to mirror the S&P 500. I want to mirror what Warren Buffett is doing. It really doesn't matter. Like, if they have a fund, index fund set up, it'll automatically allocate your investments as they are doing. So you might have somebody out there that you respect and admire, and you can just do what they're doing. You don't even have to think about it. So that's a robo advisor, and I'll get that link in the show notes. So that's what I'm talking about. And that's why I think it's important, you know, what's in it for you is for you to determine what's in it for you. What is your end goal? What does your finish line look like? Is it 1 million? Is it 600,000? Is it 300,000? Is it $0? I hope not. And if you want to look at this in more detail, I even have a month by month breakdown of how you can save one time your income by age 30 and how that could lead to allowing you to retire a millionaire. And I didn't forget about the older individuals. I also have a breakdown of how you can save three times your income by age 40. It goes month to month. It goes by age. I have the exact tools I use. Best I can tell, there's nothing I left uncovered or unturned. So if you can find an excuse, you better be very good at excuse making, because this post should cover it for it. And honestly, if you have any follow-up questions, you know where to find us. info@paycheckandbalances.com.
Boom.
Hot seat, Rich.
Nah, but I did just think about this quote, or actually it wasn't a quote. So in our Facebook group, Patrick, I'm not gonna put his last name out there because he may not want that, but he posted this image from this textbook, and he said it was copyright of 2013. And I think it's relevant here. And it says, facts of life, 45% of those in the United States aged 65 and older are financially dependent on relatives, and another 30% live on charity. If you're like most young people fresh out of college, you probably will have an urge to spend all that cash that you may be making for the first time in your life Feel free to spend as long as you manage to save for your goals and make sure you begin planning for your financial future now. The key is to start the personal financial planning process early in life and make saving a habit. So I thought that was relevant.
I agree. And that actually a good segue to my conclusion, and I have a few action items. So in conclusion for this week's Money Minute, you need to be doing something, you, and no one is going to do it for you. So my advice would actually be, because of that is, and it's exactly what I do, I don't like investing. I don't even particularly like money managed because it makes me nervous. It makes me uncomfortable. I automate everything I can possibly get my hands on. Mint is automated. These IRAs are automated. The 401k is automated. So roughly around the second of the month, and I think in the most, let's say it's a weekend or whatever the case may be, by the fifth, all the bills are paid. All the accounts are funded. Everything is sent out. About the only thing that's not paid, and it's only because it's my cell phone, because it doesn't come in until like the 21st of the month. So everything is automated. I don't think about it, honestly, more than about four times a year when I check in or when I'm looking at Mint. And then I just monitor it. So my monitoring tool happens to be Mint. But that way, I don't have to think about it actively. In that case, I'm just doing a retroactive check. Like, does everything that I thought was going to happen the first through the fifth take place? Now I'm looking at another sixth, and now all I got to do is stick to my budget. Basically, all I need to do is be responsible for about 24 more days. I fail at that sometimes, which is impressive.
Yeah, I was definitely looking up and to the right, like,
But at least I have the tools to know when and where I failed. So that's going to conclude this week's Money Minute. There's about four action items here, which I'll quickly summarize and I'll get in the newsletter. Meet with your company's financial planning department if you haven't already, or if they have one.
There's probably a number to call.
Yeah. Use your tax return to create a rainy day emergency fund. Y'all knew that was coming. I say it every year. You ignore me every year, but we're back at it. We're back about that time again for that, as Rich said, the March spring forward. So use your tax return this year to start your rainy day fund, whether that's $500, $1,000, $1,500, whatever it looks like, just start it. Use your tax cut, if you have one, to set up a 401k or investment retirement account, Roth or et cetera. It might be after taxes. If you do have it and you've been wasting and not using all this free money, which y'all know angers me on every show, at least use it to use your employer match. So let's say your tax cut is, like I said, 3%. Your employer match is 3%. Now, all of a sudden, you're saving 6% towards your retirement, so you could separate yourself from the crowd, as Rich just talked about in that quote from our Facebook group. If you don't have access to a 401k, try using your local bank, credit union. You can use a robo-advisor, or you can use one of these accounts that is available online. Y'all are going to try to come up with an excuse, and I just took three of them away from you, so best of luck to you. And then, if nothing else, do something, anything, even if it's 1%. That's 1% more than 0%. 40% of millennials have not started. 1 in 3 individuals have not started in America. Do something, anything, I beg of you. And that concludes this week's Money Minute.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I will say, I started with 1%. So when I finally did start contributing, like, that was it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start somewhere. I'm going to start here. And I remember at the time, I felt like I was super crunched for cash. You know, I was worried about what that 1% might mean. And yeah, for some people out there, that's going to make a big difference. But I'll say now, like, after having gone through that process and thinking about the experience now, it's like that 1% in the grand scheme of things, it may have seemed like a lot in the moment, but in the larger picture, it's not, you know?
Yeah. And I think most people will adjust. And it's like I've said before in another show, you always find, or most people, I'm not going to say everybody, but when you get a 1% raise or a 3% raise or a 5% raise or 20% bonus, you find ways to spend that. Very easily. So you could just as easily take a percentage of that or look at an opportunity. And same thing, I started with 1%. And what I realized, and honestly, the first time I did it, it kind of made me upset because I waited so long to do it, was how easy it was. Like, I remember our investment advisor, and I'll say them because I no longer invest with them. It was a TIA Cref, and I had a good experience with them. They came on site. They were available for 8 hours, and they said, we will be here offering free consultations for anyone who wants to speak with us. I set up an appointment. There was no line. I was like the only one who walked in there. They looked bored. I think they woke up when I came in. And it took maybe 15 minutes. I signed two forms. I rolled over two 401ks that I had like left over at, you know, or they, in this case, they weren't 401ks. I had two investment accounts that I had left at previous jobs.
Yeah.
15 minutes. They handled all the paperwork. They charged me like a minimal fee, which is reasonable, but it was a reasonable minimal fee. And they were like, all right, well, that's it. And I'm not going to say the exact amount because some people, you know, don't feel comfortable about that. I feel very comfortable. But it was crazy how much I saved that first year. And from a 15-minute conversation that I had avoided for 9 years, yeah. I was trying to think how long I was into my career by that time. So I think most people would be intimidated by this conversation, but these people, they were easy to work with. I would even say they were great to work with, answered all my questions, and handled all the paperwork for me. And that's happened twice. I've actually since then rolled over another 401k. And he just asked, he's like, hey, do you want me to handle this for you? I'll fill out the paperwork. I'll fax over what you need to sign. All I need to do is make sure that what he said he was going to, because I'm paranoid, what he said it was going to be uploaded to my account would be. I'd make sure he's not vacationing in Aruba somewhere. That was the case. And again, I think that time it took 7 minutes. So these conversations aren't as complicated as we make them. And I saw a chart recently. It looks like a slide. I think that's the easiest way to envision it. And most people, it's like a roller coaster or a slide. So most people worry and panic and they just stay on that part without ever getting on the roller coaster. But once you get over that first hill, the slide down, the ride down, that's all the benefit, all the payoff. And so if you can just get over that first hill is the work, setting it up, having that difficult conversation, rolling all those 401ks that you probably got left over and scattered around the country like Johnny Appleseed or something like that, all those seeds you didn't plant, moving them into one account at the job that you are at now. And even then, I'd say probably an hour. And I'm talking about complicated. Like you've got multiple investment accounts and multiple firms. You done lost the password. You hadn't logged in 10 years. It's been so long, Google done forgot your password. Maybe an hour. And again, just, you know, I guess what I'm saying, and I'm pleading at this point, just do something. You will be greatly beneficial to your personal, your well-being, mental, and definitely your financial.
Random, but not random. Do you like roller coasters?
I love them.
I hate roller coasters, man.
Well, now I like actual roller coasters, not the financial ones, but yes, go ahead.
So that feeling that people get in their stomach, which I presume you like.
Yeah.
I hate that feeling. Even, yo, I remember even being on a school bus and we'd go over a hill fast. I'd be like, like clenching my stomach. I hate that feeling. But
amen.
But I respect the analogy.
Living on the edge. That's what I'm all about, man.
Well, yeah, you also like went skydiving. So you're one of those people.
I did. And once again, like the hardest part was just getting in the air and I didn't have to do anything.
Actually, that's a good point. That look, boom. Analogy 2.0.
Yeah, man. The jumping out part was the easy part, trust me.
That's what the video indicated. But if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcast. As we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help. And this week's review comes from ACGGGGGG, and it reads, finally, a finance and career podcast Black millennials can relate to and enjoy, but still smacks you in the face. Thank you for all your advice and candid conversations. I laugh and learn something to apply to my life with every episode. Keep up the great work. Hope to meet you guys at a conference or event soon. So ACGGGGGGG, appreciate that 5-star review. And who knows, man, if you attend FinCon, we might bump into you later this year.
I don't know if it is, but I'm going to assume that's gang, 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 gang. So I appreciate that, AC. Gang, 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 gang.
And also, I know later this year I'll be at Podcast Movement, which is going to be in Philly in 2018. So hoping to connect with a lot of folks there, especially since it'll be in the Northeast. More to come on that as it approaches. But yeah, appreciate that 5-star review. And if you have questions, topics, things you'd like us to cover on the podcast, as Marcus mentioned earlier, info@paychecksandbalances.com. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.